In the mid-60s, Marianne Faithfull was famous for two reasons. First, her hit As Tears Go By, which was co-written by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. Second, for her relationship with Mick Jagger. They were lovers. She was beautiful and waif-like, and she lived in the middle of a scene of parties and celebrities that millions of teenagers yearned to be part of. But by 1970, she and Jagger had split up. Her heroin addiction got out of control and eventually left her homeless. She began a comeback in the 80s with records that showed her off as a fine rock interpreter of cabaret material. I spoke with her in 1994. Tell us the story of how you met Mick Jagger.
Well, I went along to a party with my first boyfriend, John Dunbar, who was a friend of Peter and Gordon. And Paul McCartney was going out with Jane Asher. It's so hard to remember all these things. And somehow, John was always up for a party, you know. He's still like that, sort of. And especially then, when we were very young. I mean, I was 17. And he must have been 19, you know, 19, 20, no more. But, you know, it was just a party. But it was a dead glam party, I suppose, even for London. And it was a lot of fun, I suppose, yes. I mean, it's somewhat sort of coloured in my imagination now by the fact that I was discovered there. But
what do you mean you were discovered there?
I was well, that's where Andrew Oldham saw me. I was discovered by several people at that party, actually. Andrew Oldham is the only person I gave my address to.
And he was the producer of your first records,
yes,
and of the Rolling,
yes,
Stones.
He managed the Rolling Stones, made their early records.
In your memoir, you reprint a press release that was written for when As Tears Go By was released. And it says, Marianne Faithfull is the little 17-year-old blonde who still attends a convent in Reading, daughter of the Baroness Orisso. She is lissome and lovely with long blonde hair.
Lots of alliteration in this press release,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yes. A shy smile and a liking for people who are long-haired and socially conscious. Marianne digs Marlon Brando, Woodbine cigarettes, poetry, going to the ballet, and wearing long evening dresses. She is shy, wistful, waif-like. Now, what did you think of that image of yourself?
I thought it was a hoot. I remember taking it back to my mum and sitting in Milman Road reading it to my mother and Chris, my brother. We just fell about laughing, you know. I never in my wildest dreams thought that people would think I was like that. Although I did dig Marlon Brando. That's true. And I was at a convent. And my mother was a baroness. But apart from that, but then again, you know, I can't be too sort of sticky about this because it's quite obvious that none of us really see ourselves as others see us.
You write, the sexual side of life was never easy for me to handle, but I'm not really that interested in sex. That struck me as very interesting because...
you're the first person to spot that.
But so much of the book is given over to your sexual life,
yeah,
and your relationships with men and women.
Of course.
So
yeah,
it was hard for me to imagine you in that situation while you were thinking that, on the other hand, you weren't really that interested
in
sex.
It was fair. I mean, you have to remember, I wrote this book, it took 2.5 years ago, so it was me now that's writing this book. I do know that in the 60s I must have been much more sexual than I am now. But I think it was a very sexual time in the 60s. There was definitely what dear old David Dalton calls the zeitgeist, which I like very much. It was a very sexual thing, that zeitgeist. At least it was in London.
There are kind of like interesting sexual chapters in your family history.
My great-great-uncle Leopold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your great-uncle was Leopold Baron von
Sacher-Masoch.
Yeah. And so he wrote the novel Venus and Furs, and the word masochism comes from his last name.
Yes, he gave his name, gave our name to masochism.
And then your grandfather on your father's side was a sexologist.
Yes.
Who invented something that he called the frigidity machine,
yes,
to unlock libidinal energy.
Well, you know, these stories about poor old Theodore are actually all my mother's stories. I don't really know. I didn't check with my father because I just thought they were so funny, the frigidity machine and the whole thing. I wanted to keep it as my mother told me. But I'm not quite sure if he really was a sexologist. He might have been a psychiatrist or something. My mother would have thought that, though.
Now you ended up doing a lot of drugs. doing a lot of heroin. How did you start doing heroin?
I used it as a coping mechanism, I think.
For coping with what?
For coping with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked for a while, but it did have a tremendous drawback, which was that it was addictive and it would kill you.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
Ages. Very long time. But I did figure it out eventually, thank God.
Now, I want to play a song that you wrote the lyrics for called Sister Morphine. That was released in England in 1969. Tell me a little bit about where you were in your life when you wrote the song and what the lyrics are about.
I don't know. It's a very weird thing about Sister Morphine because, you know, it was knocking about the house for 6 months. Mick was playing it all the time.
Playing the melody.
Playing the basic thing. Da, 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 that thing all the time. So it went into my sort of whole sort of nervous system, blood, bones, whatever, everything. I really had it in my I knew it by heart, let's say that anyway. And then I remember it, and I'm sure Mick does too. It was very peculiar. I just sat down, picked up a legal pad and a pencil and wrote it out, you know. And there it was. But I do that sometimes. It's obvious. I work on it in my head. And then when it's all ready, I do it.
Why don't we hear Sister Morphine? This is Marianne Faithfull, recorded in 1969. Our interview with Marianne Faithfull was recorded in 1994. Our 60s music series continues in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.